Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser, men are more relationship ready, and if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hi, I always want to dance when I hear that music. So welcome to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. I am Morgana. This is my husband of 25 weddings now, Devin.
Yes, this will be the last time I'll be talking. I know, we always have the same opening.
We'll let you have your hand. So before I forget, because I tend to forget this, be sure to join, if you like our show, our Crazy Sexy Midlife Love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com and download Devin's brilliant free ebook called Women Are Smarter Than Men, Secrets Every Marriage-Minded Woman Needs to Know. We are focusing today on audience questions. We have a bunch that have already come in. If you're listening live and you want to call in and ask a question, the number is 888-627-6008. And I'll say it again slower. 888-627-6008. So call in if you like. In the meanwhile, we have plenty of questions, and we certainly take long enough to go through them. And before we dive into today's questions about love, because that's our topic, one of the things that I was thinking about today, because in my Facebook feed, this party that Devin and I went to way back early in our relationship when we were exclusive, but far, far from being married, I was invited to a birthday party of a colleague of mine, and Devin had a really strong reaction to the people at that party. And
not a good reaction.
Not a good reaction. Very different than me, where I went to your party of your friends and loved everybody and really got a hit. This must be a good guy. Like, all of his friends are happily married, they're stable, they're in love, they're nice to their kids, they've been friends since they were, like, in second grade, you know, really stable stuff. So I guess I'm just the better person because I liked your friends more than you liked my fly-by-night semi-half friends.
It's a quagmire of a conversation. I do. I have some really great people as close friends. They're like on my team. And I don't know, am I supposed to tell the story about this party?
Yeah.
So.
Because the way you tell it is really funny.
Yeah, but now I don't even know if I'm capable of being funny. But that said, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood. And I don't know if this story will put me in a bad mood. But so part of the thing is that I can be a fairly woo-woo guy. I can be very philosophical. I can, you know, I've studied Kabbalah and different forms of magic for many years. And I'm open to ideas, right? And frequently those ideas are like, hey, there was somebody who put a book in a cave in the 1300s, and let's try to decipher what this person was talking about. And that's acceptable to me. And then we bandy about the possibility, or maybe we try it out and see what happens and see if we get that spiritual enlightenment. So I'm in this party, and this was without question. This was like, yes, it's a party, but yes, it is a networking event to be sure. Like, to me, it was like, okay, I get it, it's a party, but it really was like a networking thing, which I guess perhaps took me a step back right from the beginning. And I think every person there was not only was it sort of like, again, this sort of networking thing, but it was kind of this thing where, and this is my humble opinion, this is not meant to be disrespectful because maybe I'm a clown. So you know, you can take all this with a grain of salt, is that it felt like everybody was trying to outdo themselves with their own fantabulousness, where I'm just like, hi, I'm Devin, you know, because I'm still thinking, oh, this is a party. So I don't need the whole rundown, but everybody was giving me the whole rundown. And a lot of the rundown was, well, I coach, you know, people who are looking to crack into the interdimensionality of their psyche. And I support that through, I communicate with chakra points and all of this stuff. And, you know, the conversations, and I'm fine with the out there. I'm fine with wackadoodle. I'm fine with all that stuff. Like, okay, great. Let's get all hippie chakra aligned stuff. And, but that was like the first sentence. So I wasn't like, okay, so what do I do this? And I remember speaking with a handful of people, and everybody was aligning their chakras and more and better that they had cracked a code. And it would literally be like, wow, okay, well, that's interesting.
And it's no longer like good enough to be four-dimensional or five-dimensional, but you have to be 20-dimensional.
There has to be a lot. There was a lot of dimensions going on.
Yeah.
And I've actually, you know, on top of my sort of nuttiness in terms of like, yeah, okay, let's explore the universe, I also like read physics. So I understand physics to some degree. I'm not, you know, I'm not Mikio Keiku or anything like that. But I'm into this stuff. And so when somebody would bring up all this dimensionality, I'd be like, really, where does that come from? And most of the time the answer was, oh, it came to me in a dream. And that's fine. But, you know, there is some physics to these kinds of ideas. And so is it all come to you in every dream? Does everybody having a dream? And I think a lot of people that I spoke to that night were having a dream about their stuff. And so,
and there was the woman who could reprogram your DNA by making a funny noise.
Right, which is a whole thing. And that was not only reprogramming the DNA, but there was also a opening up different dimensions with the noise, which I found hard to believe. That was
you
pressing.
Were a skeptic.
I was and a skeptic meaning seeker. So I'm open to like, okay, so I'll wait here and see
judging
what happens.
My friends.
I was judging at the time. I started judging them hard, and I started becoming more ridiculous. The more ridiculous I found them getting, the more ridiculous I became. And so at some point when somebody would say, after they would tell me about their interdimensionality and their, you know, time travel and their astral travel within time doorways and going into all of it is happening simultaneously. And nobody studied with anybody. Like, you know, oh, I studied with this person who was a master of chakras. No, it's just, I was having a dream. So that all said, so when people finally took a breath about all these things that they were doing, they'd say what I was doing, because I'm still thinking I'm at a party. And so I remember saying, well, I work for a guy who owns an ice cream truck. And I tried to say it as deadpan as possible. Oh, really? Well, you work at a, what? You work for a guy who owns an, yes, because there's a lot of little kids. And when they all line up and things get hectic, like at a park or something, you have to be very nimble. And so what I would do is I would organize the ice creams so that somebody, so, you know, Salazar, I think was the name that I used, Salazar could blindly and instinctually be able to get a cherry bomb pop rather than a red, white, and blue bomb pop, which kind of looks similar, but are different, especially if you wanted a cherry bomb pop. And so he needs to be...
I love the conviction with which you're telling this story.
And that was important. So I would have these conversations and they'd be talking about these third dimensions.
But just for anybody who's wondering, did you work for an ice cream truck? Was this story true?
Oh, was this true? No, this wasn't true even marginally. And, okay. And by the way, I think it's like to me, it's an honest living. Like I have no... If anything, it was like, to me, it was just this moment where it was like, what's the most ridiculous thing I could say at this particular party? And working for a guy who owns an ice cream truck was the thing. That was the thing. And so
And I think you also told somebody that you made the noise on cruise ships.
Oh, that I was
the foghorn.
Right. Because, you know, because once in a while it would go out, so you'd have to open up the PA system and do it really loudly. I would do it through a megaphone into a bullhorn, into the microphone while everything was going on.
And after you lied to all my friends, you were thinking of breaking up with me because of that party.
I did. Because I was just, honestly, I was so, there was a point where this woman was making this noise that was opening up, you know, like cleaning out your cells down to the cellular level by this noise that she made. And I think it was a fine noise. I just question the validity of the noise and what was intended to happen. And so I had a difficult time with this, and everybody else seemed to be incredibly into it. And I would have dared not challenged it. Otherwise, I would have probably looked like a complete fool. So
I had no idea that you were considering breaking up with me.
No, well, that part was real. So I was, but really what it was actually sort of like, I was actually fine with, if these are your friends, I was fine with that. What I had a difficult time understanding is whether or not, if these people were like, this is their thing, great, big thumbs up, whatever, right? I don't have to agree. It's not my business to agree. But I was thinking, like, as we're getting in this, and I was like, at some point, I was like, okay, I need to get out of here. This is beyond not my scene. Like, it just had hit, like, I had hit an intellectual and spiritual wall. And there was a point where we're driving home and it's quiet. And I'm just like, wow, if this is your crowd, I couldn't fathom being in this crowd. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, oh, it's Jerry's birthday party, let's go to a different party now, and where there's no cake, and nobody sings happy birthday, but we all sort of like try to outdo the numbers of chakras that we're communicating with.
We're just pitching our businesses to people who aren't buying.
Right. I wasn't buying
yeah.
anything. I was just trying to, where's the birthday cake? Can I get a Shirley Temple? Do you have credit, Dean, at this bar? That was the things that I was highly focused on. And I don't think there was.
And I had no idea that there was a problem. And but this is useful if you've ever been ghosted. Like, this is one of the things that can scare somebody.
There is somebody running around who's gone to an event and they're sitting there going, wow, this is not my scene. This is not my scene. It's nothing personal, but I don't even know what to do with any of this.
So why did you decide to stick with me?
Well, because you said I should.
Oh, okay.
You said I should. That's what you said. I was like, I don't know. I kept like having this, and really I should have probably sort of like worked it out in my head and communicated to somebody who was not emotionally invested in the outcome. Like, in other words, I shouldn't have brought that whole inward brain nonsense in my skull, and I should not have handed it to you, but I did, which was bad on me. It's a terrible...
It's okay. I don't remember.
I know. It was probably so traumatic you forgot it.
And I was drunk on my chakra martini anyway.
Yeah, right, which was probably an empty glass, but that was just my interpretation. Right, it's an invisible birthday cake. You can only get this cake in the astral plane.
Oh, stop. That's so funny, though. I love that.
So
we should do that someday. Right. We can save so much
toasting
money.
Toasting glasses, right.
Yeah.
Oh, there's lots of drinks here, but you can only get them in a special multi-dimensional universe.
If so, you're enlightened.
Right, and
I can
be pouring and go, glug, 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 glug. Make it a tall one, okay? Glug, glug, glug.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. Are you not experiencing it? Right. Maybe you need to meditate.
You need to meditate while you're drinking this and let it fill you. Let it fill your psyche. So anyway, but at the time it was like, okay, if this is her, so be it. Matter of fact, I'm sure I probably said to myself, so mote it be. I probably said all that, but I was probably thinking, wow, if this is her scene, I can only make up how many stories a night can I make up about what ice cream man I work for or whatever other things that I was inventing, the foghornist.
Ah.
So anyway, I shouldn't have brought it, but I did. And I was like, I don't think this is my bag. So in fairness, I was honest. I was truthful.
Well, I would prefer that you brought it up and we could talk about it so you could find out where my head was at. Otherwise, if you hadn't, you would have assumed that these were close friends and that this is what all my friends are like. And you could have disappeared and I would have been heartbroken and had no idea why you left.
Right. So just to kind of put here's what I should have done. Yes, I should have discussed it with my lovely future wife at the time, but I think I should have discussed it after having processed it with somebody else.
Mm.
I don't think you needed to be the processor of my stuff.
Well, what I did was then I took it to my coach, because once I started liking you, I stopped being this incredibly confident, self-possessed, take it or leave it, I'm fine on my own person. And the more I liked you, the more of like a vulnerable, crazy person I became. So when you would dump something like that on me, I would then call my coach and go over it with him. And then he could give me perspective. And usually what he said is, what it means, I'd say, what does it mean? And he would say, what it means is he likes you. And you're okay. And I'd be like, okay. Because sometimes you need a guy to decode a guy.
Oh, well, that's like an absolute for sure. I would argue, and I actually write this in my ebook.
The ebook, yeah, free ebook, free download at Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. The book is Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Every Marriage-Minded Woman Needs to Know, just in case you missed it at the beginning. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, now I don't remember what I was going to say.
You were saying that you even say...
Right. Oh, okay, so here's the thing. So I would argue that women are, in fact, smarter than men. I would say they're certainly emotionally smarter and they're more community-oriented, so they're more just by nature. Again, there's always outliers. I totally get that. But I think women are sort of more invested and more capable of being in relationships, kind of ready to go, more so than men. That's not always true. And yes, there's good ones out there at every age group, all of that stuff. And so what I was kind of getting at is that women helping other women understand men is a terrible plan, because women aren't men. So you can come up with some notions about what men are thinking and doing. It's way better to ask a guy, I would argue. What Morgana did talking to her coach he's just going to have more insights to what guys do rather than just other women talking about all of their failed relationships and coming up to a conclusion that this must be like all men are terrible. And, you know, and this is the understanding we have of men that's absolutely 100% correct. And I think that's...
Well, there are some really high quality female dating
coaches. No doubt,
too.
No doubt.
But
no
I will
doubt.
Say for myself, I was as dumb and strategically bad dater as has ever walked the earth, and especially for I was in like a serial monogamist at 20 and that kind of ended at 27, and then I was just like the person who kept getting stood up or dumped for another 18 years, like really painful 18 years. And I was invited into a group of dating coaches, like really happening, successful, talented dating coaches in Southern California. And I started getting some guidance that I desperately needed. And I didn't think I needed guidance because I'd actually trained in relationship coaching. But relationship is different than dating. Like it is so different than dating. And it was guys who helped me learn how to date, how to write a profile that speaks to the kind of man that I wanted, and did. Reeled in Devin really quickly.
It took some work. It took a little.
Well, you showed up pretty quickly.
I did show up pretty quickly.
And my experience of dating just got a lot easier, a lot more pleasant. I learned to really just listen to my gut, and I stopped getting stood up because I wasn't making those dates. I've discovered that I could actually tell. I could predict with accuracy, pretty strong accuracy, who was likely to be a flake. In fact, there was even one guy who was a friend of mine. I was coaching him on his relationship with money, and he was teaching me how to like read the signals or the signs in dating profiles, like if he's wearing glasses or he's posing in front of a fancy car or he's holding alcohol or he's jumping out of an airplane, move on, he's a player. I didn't know this. I needed a guy to explain guys to me.
Yeah, that's amazing. A guy doesn't fall for that. we fall for other things. Fall for other things.
Like yeah. What?
Well, I mean, I think the bikini shot will fall for that one.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, in other words, there's a shirtless guy taking a bathroom selfie. That one, which is ridiculous. Right. Well, I mean, I think there is an equivalent bikini shot.
Yeah, guys do very silly things like, right, I like to work hard and play harder.
Well, but
if you're women, a guy, please don't put that in your profile.
Well, but women's equivalent is
what?
I can wear jeans at the picnic, and then I can go put on a fancy dress for an elegant evening.
But I see that all the time in the guys' profiles. I'm looking for a woman who can wear jeans and dress up. So I think women are writing it because they saw that. I saw that.
Right, but the women who are writing that are not that.
Oh.
I mean, you can write anything you want. That's okay. The joy of a dating profile. I'm just saying the women who are like, I wear jeans in the spring and, washing a car with a hose. Yeah, that's not.
Okay.
That's not her.
No, what worked for me, if you're listening and you want gold when writing a dating profile to appeal to your mate. And I assume this would work on women too, but it was I was told that this is how to write to appeal to the kind of guy that I want, which was I painted a picture of the life I wanted to lead with my person. And I said something along the lines of, I wake up in your arms in India, Italy, or Prague, and we make love. And then we check our email, and then we go out and we get lost at a market or a museum, or we just see what happens. And we live like that for months. And
that worked for many.
That worked for Travel Guy.
Yeah, that worked for me.
That was your name.
Yes, it was. So anyway, we've obviously gone on all kinds of tangents.
That's what we do.
That is one of the things that we do.
It is Q&A night.
But is it Q&A night?
So we do. We have some questions to answer that came in ahead of time.
Okay, good.
And if you want to jump in, if you're listening live, we want to be here for you. So I will read the phone number 888. 627-6008. And I know that calling in live can be scary for some people, and I totally get it, which is why we have questions ahead of time. And you can always reach out to us and submit questions ahead of time if calling in is too scary. But I think we also answer questions better when you're live because we can get more clarity and hear your voice. But let's start with the questions we have. So this is the problem that came in that we're going to address first. This writer said, I'm working on feeling good enough for love, and I'm exhausted from working on myself. Is there anybody on earth who hasn't felt that exhaustion of like taking class after class and doing all this exercise and all this personal development just to be worthy of love? I know that ride really, really well. So I get it. Devin, would you like to say something to this first?
No, I mean, you can jump in. I mean, I think that working on yourself is critical. The way I would look at it is that our lives are about lessons. It's not about getting to a particular place where it just rains buckets of cash, where you get to an emotional place where all of a sudden every relationship you would potentially get in is just only fantastic. So I think you have to go through stuff. I think that's part of the process. I think what happens is that at least a lot of women that I speak to, what ends up happening is they feel that they're going to work on themselves and then the guy is going to magically appear. And then it's like, now I don't have to work on myself anymore. That ride is over with. And so I'm exhausted. I'm working myself because I want all of it to end. And I think, you know, I don't look at it like, yeah, I get it. Working on yourself is difficult, and coming to sort of like truths about who you are as a person and the kinds of mistakes that we make as individuals is hard. Like there's emotional lessons that come with it. And so no doubt that once you all of a sudden you peel a layer of that onion and then you're crying and it's exhausting. I think you can kind of go, okay, well now I'm going to, you know, eat a Snickers bar, or I'm going to watch my favorite comedy for an hour, or I'm going to do something that's going to bring me sort of like joy. Feel what I mean? So I think what it is that you embrace the fact that we're here to kind of work on ourselves. And that's not going to stop once you get into a relationship. Now you get to just kind of, now it's up because there's somebody else sitting across the table from you.
Who exists to drive you crazy? Like that's his primary job.
That's one way you could phrase it.
Funny, I mean, in a good way, but because you care, the stakes are a little higher. So I'm going to approach this question and challenge in a totally different way, which is you're already good enough. There is nothing wrong with you. There is an industry based on telling you that it's your fault and there's something wrong with you that always has to be fixed. And then you can get this, you know, pay money and there's something wrong with you and we're going to fix it. You're already good enough. So that's not the problem. The work on yourself, I believe the really, truly only purpose for the work on yourself is to remove the pain. The pain and the suffering, the unnecessary pain that arises in life. We want to learn the lesson so the pattern doesn't have to keep on happening. It's like the pattern has this gift, this lesson. Almost always it has something to do with respecting yourself more, loving yourself more, honoring yourself more, trusting yourself more. And it will keep knocking on your door until you accept the delivery. And when you get it, then it doesn't have to knock on your door anymore. You will get other lessons because you're breathing and your heart is beating. But so the lesson isn't to be better. The lesson is to remove the bullshit that lets people not be nice to you. Lets you not be nice to you. Lets you accept people who are not nice to you. It is the work you do on yourself is to let go of the lies about who you think you are that you aren't. And I mean that in like who you really are is just all love. And then to survive, we pick up all these patterns and habits and survival practices that, thank God, they kept you alive, they got you here, and then you outgrow them and they become a problem and they become the baggage that you carry along. So by the way, we love the baggage. It got you here. You probably wouldn't have survived some point of your life without it. And then the work on yourself is saying, okay, thank you so much. You no longer spark joy. Bye. So that's really what it is. It's just like, imagine working on yourself is simply accepting the treasures of the experiences so that you don't have to go on the rides you don't want to go on anymore. And letting go of the bullshit that keeps you from the life you really want to live, that you know in your gut is the right life for you. And it should make things lighter. If it's not, I would, I mean, yeah, there are periods where it's just like, ugh, things hurt or they're heavy or my God, I'm feeling and it's uncomfortable and I hate it. And that just means that there's a little bit left juice or value to milk out of it. Not that there's anything wrong with you. It's like all the forces of the universe and your angels and your fairies are there for you. And a really useful question is, what do I need to learn here so I can let go of this struggle? So this is kind of a long-winded answer because
Devin and I have a long-winded retort.
Oh, good. But I don't. I really want to take out the notion that you're working on fixing yourself. You are fixed, you're not broken, and maybe you just have some clutter, some like limiting beliefs and patterns that you no longer have to carry around. And I hope that makes it easier for you, because I really, the great thing about change and interchange, what I do love about personal development is interchange can be lightning fast. It doesn't take 20 days to change a habit. If you find a better way, you take the better way. Like if you're going to work and you went to work a certain way for 30 years and now you found a way that doesn't have traffic, boom, you change. You go on the route that doesn't have traffic. The change is that fast. It's not heavy like physical reality, you know, like losing weight or something takes time. Building a house takes some time. Inner change is really fast, and then outer change follows that. Okay, Devin, retort at your peril. Go ahead.
Okay, well, it's actually what I was going to say is that really Morgana and I aren't all that far apart. So I would say during the, not literally and figuratively. So literally, I think what happens when I think about problems like this, there's kind of two, right? One is like, I'm just going to keep doing it all day long, all day long, all day long, trying to strive for some sort of general thing that's probably not quite there. Like when I say work on myself, what I do is I read, personally, I read a lot of spiritual material, everything from the Bible to the Quran to the Zohar, all kinds of religious, philosophical stuff. Right. And then when I come to cross problems within me, I try to find out how I can get to that solution. There's an old AA saying that I think comes from Chuck C that talks about this notion of discover, uncover, discover, and discard. Meaning it's not like, okay, I found a problem. Let me take that problem and let me just embrace that problem. Let me hold on to the problem and let me just grip it really tightly and then make the center of my universe about the problem. It's actually the opposite of that. In other words, we embrace, we understand that we have this thing. In other words, in relationships, it might be I stay in a relationship longer than what I should, or I'm not really aware of what's happening in the relationship. And everything I do is about, you know, staying in the relationship rather than finding out what's good about the relationship worth staying in for, right? Is this my person? Is this the kind of thing that I want to move forward with? If it's not, then you stop, you slow down, and you start examining it a little bit with a measure of clarity. Maybe that's just a conversation. And it may be, again, it could be just this one thing about a relationship, but there's a million things that are happening in our lives all the time where we're sort of like we have a moment where we can self-reflect on whether that is a good thing, whether or not it's something we want to pursue, or whether or not we should give up on it, or whatever, right? We don't necessarily give a, nobody gets an answer sheet with any of this. So what I tend to do is I'm constantly looking for spiritual improvement, but to me it's kind of like I'm very much uncover, discover, discard kind of person. So that means I will do the reading and I'll go, huh, does this apply to me? And sometimes it doesn't at all. Maybe sometimes it's just good advice just to have, because maybe it's not happening now, but it may happen in a few weeks. And so to me, it's just sort of like, I remember hearing a story years ago that it's sort of like we're boats on the ocean. And at some point, we're going to need some repairs. And we go into the harbor to get the barnacles scraped off of us, and, you know, a new paint job or something else, right? We need to get ship shape. But to be very clear, if we spend all of our time in the harbor, we're missing out on what it is that we're intended to do, which is out to be in the water, right? Not kind of ported somewhere. Our job is to be kind of knocked around by the waves and, you know, get rained on and have the elements kind of just abuse us a little bit. I'm not saying we need to make a life of being abused, because there's days that are great, but sometimes the waves are rough and you get knocked around a little bit. And then it's take time into the port. But really, ultimately, our goal is to go out there and have some fun and go, oh, my gosh, that was a bad choice. Let's go best 2 out of 3 or something like that. So I think that fits more into your model where we are good. We are whole. We are complete. And I think self-reflection is good to get us out of patterns that sometimes we get into because we've created a narrative or somebody else created a narrative about us.
And perfection is just not a prerequisite for love. And it's not a prerequisite for wealth. And it's not a prerequisite for health because nobody is perfect. So just, you know, let go of that burden. But I like the examples that you gave because actually what you do for self-improvement is stuff that you love to do. So that also might be a thing to look at in working on yourself, you know, air quotes, work on yourself. What do you love to do? What would be fun instead of work that takes you in the direction of who you want to be and the life you want to have and who you want to have it with, so that maybe it's less punishment and it's more just a great way of life. And because I sent this out in an email, I think this morning, so it's on, it's sort of, you know, in my head, in the ether, is every time you say no to one thing, you're saying yes to something else. So it's really useful to take a look at what you say yes to that makes you say no to yourself. And where can you flip that? Where can you say no to things that allow you to say yes to yourself? You want to be attracted? You want to be magnetic to what you want? Start saying no to the things that allow you to say yes to yourself, to your highest, best self. So that might actually, Devin loves to bring up the Snickers, saying no to the Snickers might be a way of saying yes to yourself and your self-love and health and the life you want to lead. So think about saying no to people-pleasing is a really good one for us women so that you can say yes to your authentic self and see how that, just that little tiny shift of awareness changes your life.
And by the way, I would also say if you're somebody at home who's into that multidimensional universe and you get joy, happiness, connection, ease of life, go do it. Like I was having fun with it, sort of like telling the story of it and my reaction to it. But, you know, at the same time, if that's something that you're into, then do that. Go enjoy yourself and go glean whatever it is that you can that's going to enrich your life. And you may find a great partner in that kind of community. I mean, ultimately I did, so kind of worked for me.
Well, my friend Kimberly lives in like a dozen dimensions at all time.
Good.
But she's also really grounded and she's like one of the best friends I have. And she's not trying to sell me anything.
Well, and I mean, I think at some point, you know, I think what I end up trying to do just in my own life is to try to find a measure of balance. Mm. In other words, I want things to be easy, but I also know that I have to participate in the things that are harder and there's going to be challenge. What has gotten me through a lot of it is that when I realize that a lot of what happens around me or to me isn't personal, I think that's sort of like one of those, for me, kind of like epiphany moments. I mean, it happened a number of years ago. But when I realized that I was in a relationship where the person wasn't doing it to me to get me, they were just doing it because that's what they did. And I was, you know, just trying to cope with this thing rather than just acknowledge that certain behaviors are more frustrating or upsetting than others. But it wasn't that they were trying to abuse me into a circumstance. It was just, this was how I felt about a particular environment.
Very good. Let's see where.
Do we want to go to, do we want to dare question number two? I think we have plenty of time, so maybe all three.
I hope we can get to all three. I think I would like to jump to number three and then end on number two.
Okay.
Okay, so the question that we're going to address now is, this woman shared, my intuition used to be so good until fear came in, and she's trying to balance it back out. And I love stuff about intuition and fear. Do you want to dive in, or shall I jump in first?
Well, you seem like you're ready to go. So
okay.
I do have stuff, because there will be a rebuttal,
okay,
or a retort, or an addition.
Well, first, fear can block intuition when we're trying to control our intuition, but fear can also be our intuition. I knew a martial arts teacher decades ago who would teach that Israeli martial art, Krav Maga or something like that. And he would work with women for self-defense. And he interviewed a lot of women who had been assaulted. And he said that they all had a feeling about the person. And there are certain things we women do, like if somebody wants to hurt us, they might like offer to carry our groceries or do something out of a sense of reciprocity, so we let our guard down. That tends to be a female thing that he shared with me. But he said that what part of what he teaches in response to is that every woman who had been attacked had a feeling. She sort of, her body sort of knew. And I think that is our intuition, that we pick up like the tiniest little micro signals that our logical mind doesn't even process. We're so aware of tiny, tiny signals. We are so wise and intuitive that way. So in those cases, fear is our best friend. And that's a really good time to listen to the fear. Another really good way to relate to fear is when there's something that we want to do that scares us. So this is very different from that contracting, this person isn't safe, or it's not a safe environment. That's one way that fear shows up. Another way fear shows up is something that is big and scary that we haven't done before, that we aren't sure that we can do, but would grow us. And what I love about that kind of fear is it tells us this is important. It's like a flag in the sand saying treasure below. And that's the kind of fear that I like to move towards. I like to make friends with that sensation of fear. And that kind of fear feels expansive, like I'm bigger if I fly across the world for the speaking engagement. Holy hell, will I fall off the planet? I had that thought the first time I flew to Australia to speak, because it's so far and it felt like I could disappear, but it made my world bigger and it was exciting. And I got into the habit for years of doing something that terrified me like that every month, until it just became a companion. Something that grows you into who you want to be feels different because it feels bigger, it feels inspired, and it's going in the direction you want to go. Getting harmed by somebody, that's not a direction you want to go. So those are like the two different flavors of fear that I would pay attention to. One is really expansive and makes you bigger, and it has a feeling of inspiration breathing in. And then there's the, ooh, don't take any, you know, risks that you can't survive. Like if it'll wipe you out financially or harm your body because you only get one. Those are, you don't have to do that. You don't have to risk your life or limb or your nest egg. But there are things, and only you can decide if the risk is safe enough. So for me, humiliating myself in front of a bunch of people is not ideal, but I will survive it. I may have stage fright in the minutes leading up and wish I were dead, and wish the earth would cover me up. And that's like every time that I speak. But then once it happens, I have so much fun that it goes away. Because also that kind of fear is more adrenaline and excitement and not really truly fear. So intuition really has to always come down to I trust myself. And that is a good mantra for you. What if I trusted myself? What if I trusted myself? Asking a good question and letting the answer come in really quickly. What if I trusted my knowing? Then what would I decide? And I find that intuition is so like feather light that the answer can come back to you so quickly and softly that you can pretend not to hear it. But our mind is programmed to answer questions when we put out the question. So come back to, what would the answer be if I trusted myself? And then see how that feels. Because when we get into our head and all like analytical and controlling, that can really like mess up the intuitive signals. But our body speaks in truth. And we just learn how to feel it, and it's something to practice. Okay, Devin, go ahead. Top that. Ha ha.
So I probably can't, and that's fine. To me, truth is one of those things. And when we talk about intuition versus fear, I mean, I think most of the fear that people that I speak to on a very regular basis deal with fear not as, oh my gosh, I shouldn't allow that person into my house kind of fear, where there's like a real sort of like danger kind of element. I'm not talking about that kind of fear. I'm talking about the stuff where somebody is preventing themselves from moving forward over some sort of a notion in their mind that they have built into a fear that prevents them from doing the thing. And with that kind of fear, to me, it's sort of like, The way people have described it to me, and I love this analogy, is fear is one of the very few things that when you face it, it gets smaller. When you start running towards it, it gets smaller. And so what does that mean? I think a lot of this stuff has to do with the kind of mindset around, you know, activities that we want to do. In other words, at some point, you know, as a writer, if I want to keep writing, at some point I'm going to have to let other people see my work. Is that a scary thing? Yes, it is. Do I have fear? Yes. Do I have more fear when it's like, if I'm letting a friend read it and I know they're probably just going to be supportive and loving, great. I don't have a ton of fear. But when you start moving up, let's say you're writing to a place where, okay, now it's a professional editor who's somebody who can get you signed at a big fancy book company, then there's a different magnitude of fear. Any one of the different rungs on that particular ladder of letting somebody else read your work can debilitate you to the point of not allowing anybody from reading your work. It may feel real. It may feel like it's a necessary thing. It may feel like you want to run the opposite direction. And a lot of times it's just kind of more of a dull sense of confusion or disorientating kind of sense where it's harder to move forward. And so what do you do? I think one of the things that I think works is not isolating over the problem. Meaning, if I talk about this thing that I'm afraid of, I will give it more power. Or somebody will laugh at me and say that I'm being ridiculous or silly, or I'm doing it wrong, and I don't want to handle that kind of, you know, there's that sort of like all these weird things that start feeding that fear. You know, I have a dear friend of mine who I speak to quite regularly. And when he's like, he's the guy who's not emotionally attached to my nonsense, right? Even my lovely wife is attached to my nonsense because we're a team, right? I'm attached to her nonsense. So I need to speak to somebody who isn't, who could just see the clear path because he's not connected to the results. He's like, dude, I'm on your team, whether or not you get the thing you want or you don't get the thing you want. But I think the best way to go about that thing. So what ends up happening is when I call him up and I say, okay, here's the problem that I'm experiencing. I get to hear myself articulate what the problem and the fear is. What do I think I'm not going to get? What it is that I'm not, that I think I deserve. I'm going to lose the thing that I already have. Those are kinds of regular fears that prevent us from moving forward and taking action. So when I hear myself articulated, it sounds very different talking about a fear that I have or a discomfort that I have that's rolling around the inside of my head. Inside of my head can be sometimes a barren landscape, right? But articulating, it's like, oh yeah, no, I'm just kind of being ridiculous. Or even better yet, when I call up this guy and I say, oh, here's this thing that is terrifying and scaring and uncomfortable, all that other stuff. And I hear him laugh. His laughter doesn't necessarily tell me that he thinks what I'm saying is stupid or silly. More often than not, it's him identifying with the issue and the feeling that I'm having. I think my wife is pulling me in closer. So probably because my head is being cut off and I'm in this weird camera angle. But that's what ends up happening. So what ends up happening is when I hear myself articulate the thing, I also, when I do that, when I start speaking to it about with friends and other people that I can trust, what I end up doing is I sort of like build a network. I build a posse of people who are there to support me through the problem that I think that I'm having. Because sometimes the problem I think that I'm having isn't a thing. It's not actually standing in my way. It's just me having feelings about moving forward in something that is scary.
Or the thing you think it is isn't the thing it really is. Like the core of my work as a coach always comes down to making it safe for change. I like to say that change happens at the speed of safety. So if something isn't safe, in fact, or just feeling, it's really helpful to examine that and find a plan for how to make it safe. Maybe take smaller steps or just go through the worst case scenario or go through a process to get into better alignment. You know, that's what I do with money all the time is make it safe to make and keep money by looking at what the unconscious dangers are. Very, very often what's stopping us is not even the stuff that we're aware of. So when you have that fear of danger around what you want to do, and it isn't enough to just say, oh, it's fear, fear is my friend, which works sometimes and doesn't work other times, especially when it's a deeper seated issue, like really the deep, you know, the really deepest human issues around lovability, worth, right to exist, belong in our tribe, you know, all that kind of stuff, that really needs to be treated with love and respect and care. And it needs to be safe to work through that with the goal of,
I just want to get to that third question.
Thank you. We're not going to get to the third question.
Oh, okay.
So when fear is getting in the way, and this is a really interesting thing that for you, the person who wrote My Intuition Used to Be So Good, what is feeling dangerous around intuition might be something to take a look at. And what do I need to do to make it safe? What wants to happen here? Because on the other side of every single time the fear comes up that stops us, it's like this magical portal of some initiation, some personal growth into the next level of our personal power. And it's on the other side, going through that portal where all the goodies are. And there's a reason that we hesitate. So that's where the growth happens, is like getting whatever the lesson is, whatever the transformation is of going through that fear portal and making friends with what you want and making it safe for what you want. And then you get what you want. Did that make sense? I was kind of in a channeling state at the moment. So.
You did great.
Okay. I think we have 1 minute left. So what can you say about, this was this is Devin's wheelhouse, this last question. That's why I saved it for last, and then we ran out of time. This woman writes, I'm in a long-distance relationship, and I don't know how to ask for what I want.
We're going to have to get to that question next week. We can discuss it, because I don't think I can spit out a 10-second answer for that. We'll answer that question for sure next week, but can we talk very briefly about Clubhouse?
Yeah.
Should we?
Yeah, Devin and I have been really active in the Clubhouse app, iPhone only, invitation only. I don't even know how many millions of people are in it. This Saturday, I am holding a room at 10 a.m. Pacific time. The topic is big money, love, and women. And Devin is hosting the Podcasting for Authors room, sponsored by Club Pod, which is the biggest podcasting focused club in all of the Clubhouse app. What would you like to say about your room on Sunday?
We're going to have a great lineup of folks. I don't have the list in front of me, but we have a great lineup of folks, and we're going to talk about podcasting. And we're going to talk about writing. We're going to talk about how to be a guest on a podcast.
And you are interviewing Sam Bennett.
Oh, right. Sam Bennett's going to be there.
The best-selling author of Start Where You Are. I think I don't have all of her books in front of me. Her books, I see them at eye level every time I go into the FedEx store. I see them at eye level prominently displayed every time I was going to airports, back when I was going to airports. And podcasting was like the lion's share of her like book tour, publicity tour for getting these primo placements for her books. That kind of placement, how to be a bestseller and stay a bestseller, how to use podcasts to promote your book and your brand and your business. You want to tune in to the Podcasting for Authors room at 10 a.m. Sunday Pacific time. Our special guest is Sam Bennett. Next week, special guest, Dr. Gary Salyer, relationship.
Oh, Gary's coach. Coming. Right.
Yeah. Gary's therapist. Fun. And his specialty is making it safe to love again. So join us next week, 5 p.m. Pacific time, Wednesday, for more Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Join us at crazysexymidlifelove.com to join the family and download the book. And that should complete our show for today.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.